This episode is brought to you by the 5-Day Money Challenge. Get your stuff together with money and increase your confidence in just 5 days. Save your seat at whitneyhanson.com/moneychallenge and join in on the fun. Hello and welcome to the Money Nerds Podcast, where owning a calculator, budgeting your money, and having a net worth is actually cool. I'm your host, Whitney Hanson, and each week I'll be chatting with inspiring people to learn their secrets to financial success. Now let's dive into the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. I have to apologize. Not a good way to start off the podcast, I know, but I just have to say I'm sorry that I did not get an episode out last week. I was so tied up in stuff for the Money Summit that honestly, it was just way too much and it was just another thing. And frankly, I'm kind of a solopreneur, so I'm doing most of this stuff on my own. My fiance hops in every now and then to help me with editing and show notes, but yeah, I'm kind of a one-man shop, so I apologize for not getting that out to you. But today you're in for a really special treat. I got the chance to interview Jesse Furon, who is a little rock star and is really making some pretty cool progress in the financial industry. And so it was really fun to chat with her. But before I dive into the interview and give you a little introduction to who she is, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about the summit and some of the cool things that came out of that. So the summit ended up having 26 speakers, myself included, and it was all female speakers, which I was super excited about. We had over 600 people that actually signed up to be part of it. And we almost got near 20,000 views of all of the videos as a whole. So it was incredible. It was a really, really great opportunity. I'm very grateful for Cinch Financial for sponsoring the event as well and helping me get the event off the ground and stuff from the early days. So that was really cool. But it was a really fun event. And I hope that you were able to at least hop into a couple of the free sessions. If not, you can actually purchase it on my school. It's called Money School. So if you just go to whitneyhanson.com, click on courses, it'll take you directly there. You can purchase all 26 sessions. They were incredible. It was a ton of fun. So anyways, if you were able to attend, I appreciate that. If not, don't sweat it. You can always still get access to all of that content as well. Okay, so let's dive into today's episode with Jesse Furon. Jesse Furon is, she's a little rock star. She's got 3 kids. She's married. She's a financial coach, and she is the creator of jessefuron.com. So the cool thing about Jesse's story is that it's very well-versed. She actually talks a lot about how she planned a wedding for $500, how she's getting out of debt. And she used to be a blogger at thebudgetmama.com. So it's changed now. Her primary focus is now jessefuron.com. And it was just really fun to pick her brain and hear her story of climbing herself out of debt as well. So in this episode, we talk about the moment that she knew they needed to pay off debt, what that was. We talk a lot about her humbling experience of selling her Tahoe, which honestly, guys, that was her dream car. It was completely everything she ever wanted. And it was interesting because she said she actually put her identity and her value in that car. And so we talk a lot about how she made that decision and how she was brave enough to do that. What was the philosophy, the mindset behind that? We talk a lot about why she's a fan of zero balanced budgets, how she tracks her spending, her $500 wedding, and why she believes that going into debt for a wedding is a really bad idea. We talk about rebranding her business from the Budget Mama to jessefuron.com and how to make money blogging. So we go a little bit into detail there, and she also shares how long she thinks it might take for you to get traction with your blog if you're just starting out. All of this and so much more. Guys, I am so excited to introduce you to Jesse Furon from jessefuron.com. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today, I have one of my longtime friends that I've never actually met. As weird as that sounds, I know. We've been friends through a community called FinCon, so you guys have heard about this a little bit here and there, and then through Instagram. So I am honored to connect with Jesse Furon. Jesse, thanks for joining.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm super excited to officially get to meet you, kind of, sort of in person, right?
That's right. So, Jesse, how do you introduce yourself to strangers? What do you say?
I first told them that I'm a stay-at-home mom to three little kids. They're crazy. They're ages 5, 3, and 18 months. So life is a little hectic. And then I tell them that I'm also a financial coach. My husband and I, we have worked extremely hard to become almost 100% debt-free. We just have the mortgage left, which we are hoping to pay off this year. We owe just over $23,000 on it. So we're hoping to officially be 100% debt-free by the end of this year. And so I always like to introduce myself as a financial coach, as someone that can, you know, I've walked the walk. And so I'm always happy to get in the trenches and help somebody else climb out.
I love that. So what exactly does a financial coach do?
Basically, I help you overcome the excuses that we tend to make for ourselves, because managing money is so difficult. And, you know, there's a zillion and one excuses. My parents didn't teach me how to manage money. I suck at math. Well, I don't have an accounting degree. I don't know how to do this. I don't know where my money's going. These debt collectors, they keep calling me and keep hounding me, and I don't understand. I don't get it. I can't get it. And I try to turn those can'ts, as lame as it sounds, into cans, because you can do this. You can. I'm living proof that you can do it. You know, if you walked in a mess, you are a messenger now. You get to clean it up and you get to bring yourself, you know, full circle around.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So why pay off debt? Like, what was it for you guys, for you and your husband, where you decided we have to change things up?
Well, we, in 2012, we had our first child, and we have Irish twins, so they're very close in age. And when I found myself, I literally started 2012 pregnant and ended it pregnant. So when we found ourselves pregnant with our second child, my husband was self-employed at the time. So we, this was actually before the Affordable Care Act went into full force here in Georgia. So we had a private insurance policy that did not cover maternity. And so we were facing, you know, potentially huge medical bills, and I was going over our budget, and I started realizing that we were never going to pay off our debt, which at the time, compared to everybody else on the face of the planet, we were doing really well. We only had two credit cards. Neither one were maxed out, very low balances on both of them. And we had one car loan, and then we just had my student loans and the mortgage. So we didn't have, you know, an astronomical amount of debt at that point. But I realized that I was not going to be able to continue to stay home with them if we kept holding on to this debt and we didn't start making changes. It wasn't going to happen. And we didn't want me to have to go back to work, because literally over half of my income was going to go to childcare anyways, not including my commute to Atlanta to go back to my old job where my old career as a project manager and accountant was. So when we started looking at all that, I kind of started realizing, I'm like, we've got to do something. We've got to change this. And so when I came to the conclusion to get rid of the credit cards, that was the first thing. And my husband was totally on board with that, you know, because even kind of society sees that as stupid debt. Mm-hmm. And so we got rid of the credit cards, but then my husband really wanted to get rid of my Tahoe that had the car loan on it. But I did not want to get rid of my Tahoe. So I was having a little bit of a come to Jesus moment there. I was having a hard time getting rid of my fancy Tahoe. I had a fully loaded, I mean, complete Mac Daddy wood grain interior Tahoe. It was so awesome. And got rid of it and paid in cash for a very old purple Sequoia. But the only bells and whistles is that it has leather interior and a sunroof, and that's it. Like, the stereo, we had to end up replacing the speakers because they popped so bad. So it was very hard to have to do that, to go from having this really nice car, because for me, without realizing it, I kind of put my value in my cars. I always liked having a nice car, driving around and looking nice. And here I was going to a car that honestly on the outside did not look as nice. And so for me, that was really hard. And so we got rid of the Tahoe, and then we started attacking I had just under $30,000 in student loans. And so we started attacking that, and we finished paying that off in 2015. And we've just been working on getting the house paid off since then.
Wow, that's incredible. So when you first started the debt-free journey, including the Tahoe, how much debt did you guys have?
We had just over $55,000.
Wow. Yep.
It was a lot.
It sneaks up on you too, right?
Well, that's not including the mortgage. The mortgage would have made that number a little bit higher, but the consumer debt with the student loans was just over $55,000.
Gotcha. And what did you study in school?
Accounting.
Oh, me too. Did you like it?
Yes and no. I do not like taxes. So my tax classes, I cried, I think, during those. I was like, this is awful. I don't understand.
It's so hard.
Yes, it was very, very, very hard. I loved all the bookkeeping stuff and the cost management stuff like that. That was totally in my wheelhouse, but the tax stuff was not in my wheelhouse.
No, I'm totally with you. I went through that too. And I was like, oh, this is not the right degree for me. Like, oh, crap. You know, that's how life goes sometimes.
Yes.
So, okay. And then you guys started paying off the debt. You got your husband on board. You sold your Tahoe, which, I mean, I can imagine that would be tough, especially if you have kind of an identity with that car, or it's like your big kid moment where you finally feel like you made it or whatever it might be.
Yes, because a Tahoe was my dream car. That was my dream car. Oh, I know that probably sounds silly to some people, but a Tahoe was my dream car.
No, I don't think that sounds silly at all. So I want to hear more about that, because that's what most people would consider very drastic. So how did you talk yourself into that? How long did it take? What made you finally jump over the edge on that idea?
It took me probably about a good 7 months, if I'm being honest, from us paying off the credit cards to me being willing to let go of the Tahoe. I always call this my humbling experience, because I kept thinking that with the money we had, which was right about 7,000. I think it was, what did we have? I think we had about 77,000 or 77,000, I'm sorry, 7,700 to pay for another car. And I kept thinking we could possibly get another Tahoe, just an older one, maybe not as nice, right? Yeah, but that's not how it works. Yeah, that's, you know, especially with the area that we live in, Tahoes are, they hold their value very well. So they tend to be pretty expensive. And so we kept going around trying to find dealerships, because we still had the loan on the Tahoe. And according to Kelley Blue Book, we were not upside down. We actually had $2,000 in equity on it. But we learned pretty quickly that car dealerships, they go based on the auction price, not on the Kelley Blue Book price. Mm. And the auction price for my particular Tahoe, because my Tahoe was actually a hybrid. And here in the South, nobody wants a hybrid Tahoe. They want a jacked up Tahoe that's loud as anything. And so the value of my car was actually $2,000 less than what we owed for the auction price. And so we were struggling to find a dealership to meet our trade. So then that way we could use the full $7,700 that we had to buy another car. And so it was so difficult. I mean, we spent my birthday in 2014 going around to all these dealerships with two little kids trying to find me another Tahoe, and we couldn't, but we finally found a dealership that was willing to take our trade and just wipe out basically the loan on the Tahoe. But the only option was a purple Sequoia that at first I just cried. Literally we were leaving the dealership and I'm like sobbing, like hyperventilating, crying. And my husband goes, if this is how you're going to be, we'll just turn around and go get the Tahoe. This is not worth it. Like, you are crazy right now. I cannot even handle this. Like, I feel like you're going to pass out. What is wrong with you? But it was so hard. It was so hard to let that Tahoe go and that, you know, quote unquote dream car of mine just go. I was having such a hard time with it, you know. And some of my friends couldn't understand, because, you know, they don't put their value in their cars, but they put their value in their house. Whereas for me, I don't put my value in my house. I would live in a tiny home and be totally content with life, but I want the nice car. That's what I wanted. So for me, it was really hard, because I had to let go of that identity and that dream car in order to achieve the financial freedom that we were chasing after. And to this day, I absolutely love my Sequoia now. I don't ever plan to get rid of it. I've totally learned to love it and have realized that, you know, the Tahoe was not worth the car payment that I had with it. I mean, the car payment was just under $500 a month. It was insane, you know, so now I have a paid for car that I don't have to worry about.
That's amazing. I appreciate you sharing that too, because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, and they know in their heart the best financial move is to get rid of the car, but it's that emotional side where they're like, oh, I just can't do it. I love this car so much.
It is. It's hard, you know, and I mean, my Sequoia has got little rust spots on it and little dings and scratches and all sorts of things that my Tahoe did not have. So, you know, for me, it was really hard, because the outside of the Sequoia just does not, you know, it didn't shine and glimmer like my pretty Tahoe did. So it was hard. It was hard, you know, to go from the nice car to the not so nice car.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So take us back even further. How was it talked about when you were growing up with your family?
Believe it or not, I actually come from a household where my mom taught my brother and I how to budget. We learned, pretty much my entire life, I've known how to budget. But that didn't stop me from failing with money in my early adult life. By the time I was 21, I'd sunk myself into over $11,000 of credit card debt. I also had a brand new car. You would have thought I would learn my car lesson, but I didn't. Had a brand new car, and I was living in a luxury apartment, and I was dead broke. And I couldn't understand because I knew how to budget, but for whatever reason, I wasn't making the connection between the money sitting in my checking account and my budget. Like, I knew to have the categories. I knew what categories to have. I knew how to figure out my expenses. I knew how to do all these things, but I couldn't make it connect. And it wasn't until I started using a zero balance budget that it just was like that light bulb went off in my head. I realized that if I take my income minus my expenses, that bottom number should always be zero. And if it's not, then you go back in and you revise and you revise and you revise until you get that number to zero. And that just for me was what clicked, and I finally got it, so to speak, and was able to start managing my money well.
I love that. So I'm sure being a money coach too, you probably on occasion see balances that are maybe negative. So what suggestions do you have if someone's doing this exercise and they look at it and they're like, oh, frick, I have no money. I'm actually in the hole. What do you do if that's you?
Well, the first thing I'll have them do is I will have them list out, you know, their 3 to 5 priority expenses, like the expenses that they absolutely every month, you know, have to meet, which, you know, obviously is going to include their mortgage or their rent and their utilities, but anything else that is super important. You know, some people have like professional dues that they have to pay, you know, childcare, anything else that's super important that they have to meet every single month. Those are the priorities expenses. So list those up there, because those might be ones that you can't necessarily reduce or cut from your budget. So once you've identified those, you know what's most important to you. Then from there, look at all of your expenses and figure out which ones can you just completely eliminate. Even if it's just for a season in your life, which ones can you completely eliminate? And then from there, look at the ones that you can reduce and figure out ways to reduce those expenses. And keep doing that until you get those expenses down to where your balance is back to zero. But even if you've reduced it as much as you can and you can't get it to zero, then the next step is you have to start looking at ways to increase your income, because there is no other way to make the balance work. You can't make the math work any other way.
Yeah. So do you think younger Jesse would have put the Tahoe as one of the top priorities?
Probably. If I'm being honest, in fact, I held on to it for so long because, as bad as it sounds, I kept reworking the budget to try to make that unit work in there. And my husband was getting so mad at me. And honestly, it took my husband looking at me and going, "You're being a hypocrite right now." Mm. He was like, because if the roles were reversed, because his truck was paid for like long time ago. So his truck was already paid for. He was like, if the roles were reversed, you would be encouraging me to get rid of the truck. But here it is. You're doing everything you can to keep this Tahoe, but yet you're so adamant about getting rid of the debt, but you're refusing to let go of the Tahoe. Mm. And so I just had to kind of humble myself and realize, okay, yeah, he's right. Like, I can't keep holding on to this Tahoe. I'm holding on to something that is going to end up financially draining my family because we can't keep going in this way.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. And I like the zero-based balance as well. I think budgeting that way is so, it just makes sense.
It does.
Is there any other things that when it comes to like monthly managing of your money that you think people should be doing that aren't currently?
Definitely the tracking of expenses. I think this is where a lot of people get tripped up, because they know they're supposed to track their expenses. And so a lot of people will sometimes keep their receipts, you know, in like a basket or something by the door, but then they wait till the end of the month to go through all of these transactions and to input them into their budget, whether they're writing it out by hand or their budget software or their spreadsheet. But the problem with that is kind of twofold. One, it takes forever and it's overwhelming. So a lot of times we just put it off and don't want to do it because we know that's going to take us an entire day to make this happen. But then the other part of that is that we might not realize that we went over budget until it's too late. Mm. And so then it just kind of compounds on itself over and over again to where you are completely out of whack with your budget. Where instead, if you track it as it happens, you can identify those little mistakes to keep them from adding up to a bigger mistake at the end of the month when you're completely out of whack with your budget.
That makes so much sense too. I think you're right. It's sometimes we look at that stuff and it's way too late. We're like, oh, I shouldn't have spent this much money on eating out or this much money on whatever it is, but it's always too late. So yeah, I think you're right. Tracking is super critical. How do you personally track your expenses? Do you have any tips?
For me, I actually keep a notebook in my car. Cause I'm the one that does primarily a lot of the spending, in our family. So I keep a notebook in my car and I will literally write it all down. And then I will just, you know, if I've done a transaction that day, I will usually take the notebook in. And then by the end of the night, after the kids are in bed, I'll go through and input it into my little budget binder that I have, that I keep all of our budget information. So I'll input it then. There have been times I've had to wait till the end of the week, but I don't ever let it get past 1 week. Because if I do, then it is completely overwhelming. And then I just don't want to do it, to be honest with you, because it's overwhelming. So, but I do. I keep just a notebook in my car, and I have that basically with me at all times. No, and then my husband, he just hands me his receipts.
Oh, he does? He's like, here you go. Yeah.
He does. He literally does. He just walks in and, like, before he even says hi to me, he's just like, here you go.
You got him trained. That's pretty good.
It's taken 8 years of marriage for that to happen.
So speaking of marriage, that was the other thing. When I was going through all of your information and just learning more about yourself, it was so cool to hear that you had your wedding for $500. Okay, what the heck, lady? How did you do that?
Well, I have to always mention first that my mom, graciously enough, for her wedding gift to me was my wedding dress. So my wedding dress was not included in the $500, thankfully. But the whole wedding ceremony, it cost us $500 to go get married and have our photos done, which the photos were the most important to me. It was a very small wedding. It was only 14 people in attendance, which of course made a lot of our family and friends not so happy. But the reality of the situation was, you know, I was just coming out of, you know, that over $11,000 of credit card debt that I had at 21. I was just getting to the end of paying that off. And so I didn't have a lot of money. My parents didn't have a lot of money to give me for a wedding. My in-laws didn't have a lot of money to give us for our wedding. And my husband had just started his own business, so he didn't have a lot of money to pay towards the wedding. And so I knew that I didn't want to go into debt for a wedding. I just thought that that was a silly way to start, you know, your new life together, to go into debt for it. So I started trying to come up with ways to earn extra money. And so I started, you know, selling off a bunch of stuff and kind of working that angle. And I ended up saving up to $500. And I was struggling to find a place to get married for $500, but I found a venue. It was about 2 hours away from where we were living outside of Atlanta, and they had a wedding package that was just under $500. And so I paid $500 and we got married in a gazebo. It was not, you know, the Pinterest perfect wedding at all. We did not have a reception. We literally all went to a restaurant afterwards and ate, and then we went back to the hotel and partied. And then we went on our honeymoon, and that was it. I mean, it really, you know, it wasn't spectacular at all. There was, you know, again, there was no pretty decorations. There was none of that. But, you know, at the end of the day, we've been married for 8 years, and I wouldn't change any bit of it, you know, because as much as I would have loved to have the big, beautiful Catholic wedding, I couldn't afford it. It was plain and simple. I was like, either I don't marry my husband or I marry him. And I'm thankful I did that, because in 2015, my dad actually passed away from cancer. So I'm like, if I had waited, my dad wouldn't have walked me down the aisle. And so that's why for me, I didn't want to go into debt. I didn't want to take out debt to do it, because we'd still be paying it off. And I wanted to make sure that at the end of the day, it was us and we were married and that was it. Like, I didn't care about the big pretty wedding. I had to just cut it down to what I really wanted in the end, which was to be married to my husband. And that was it.
Oh, that is beautiful. And that seriously, like, brought tears to my eyes. I'm like, oh my God. That, I mean, it's a good point too, though. Sometimes we wait for this perfect moment and life happens. And sometimes you really regret those things, because life does happen, that you should have just taken advantage of when you had the opportunity. So I think that's a dang good tip and a really good point to make. So with the wedding too, the $500 package, do you know, have you checked in on this lately to see, do they still offer a similar package?
I do not know. Honestly, I'm not sure. It was a very small wedding chapel, and it's in a very small town. The town's called Helen, Georgia. And anyone that's ever been familiar with it, they know it's this very German town. That's like everything. It's Bavarian, everything. And so everybody there, it's a very small community. And so the chapel was super, super small that we got married at. And I actually chose to get married in the gazebo versus the chapel, because the chapel had seafoam green carpet. And I didn't want that in wedding photos. So I was like, we'll just get married in the middle of July in Georgia outside. Let's hope to God I don't sweat to death.
That is awesome. But I mean, you're, at the end of the day, you're still married. And like you said, you've been married 8 years. So clearly the size of your wedding has nothing to do with the length of your marriage or anything like that. So I think that's a key point.
And for me, my grandparents, when they got married on Keesler Air Force Base. They went and had their honeymoon at the hotel, and all they had to eat was ketchup and hot water, and they made tomato soup. And I always look at that, you know, because my grandmother always told me, she goes, it's not the wedding that matters. It's the marriage that matters. If you put all this time and effort and energy into building this perfect wedding, but you don't put that same time and effort and energy into building this amazing marriage, then what is the point? And so that's, I kind of took that to heart and realized that, you know what, I can sit here and try to do all these different things to make this glamorous wedding and spend all of this money. But really, in the end, what is that going to do for me? What is that going to do for me? That's not going to better our marriage just because we had a fancy wedding.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. There was a stat recently, I can't remember where the heck I read this, but it was something to do with however much you spend on the wedding is like the higher the amount, the more likely you are to get divorced.
Oh my God.
Holy crap. You know, so if that's not, I mean, for me, I was like, ooh, that's interesting.
Yeah, that is very, very interesting. Yeah, that is. I mean, if you have the money, spend it, you know, definitely, but don't go into debt over your wedding day, because it's one day out of your entire life. And there's going to be so many amazing days that come after that, that it's not worth it going into debt and sinking yourself into such a big hole for. It's really not.
Yeah, I'm with you on that too. So speaking of like these amazing things after you're out of debt, what was a moment where you were so grateful that you guys had paid off all the debt that just happened recently? Was there anything that happened? You're like, oh my gosh, thank goodness we don't have debt so we can take care of this.
Yes, absolutely. April 15th. And my husband and I are both now self-employed. And so we are in the wonderful world of having to pay, you know, self-employment tax and all that fun jazz. And so we were having this year to pay our first quarter taxes and our 2016 tax mm-hmm. at the same time. And it was like right at $10,000. And a part of me was like, oh my God, I want to throw up. I cannot believe this. I mean, but in the end, we had the $10,000 to pay. So even though it was kind of like we had to kind of pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and make that money happen, I'm thankful we didn't have the debt, because we would have never been able to do that. We would not have been able to make that happen at all.
Yeah, $10,000 is a big chunk. And when you owe the government, they're not quite so nice.
They're not. They really are not nice. And they're definitely not somebody that you want to owe money to. So no. I'm thankful that we had the cash to do that.
Tell me a little bit about this whole, you and your husband are both self-employed. What's his business? And then how do you do that cohesively with that? And with three little ones too? It's just craziness. How do you manage all of that?
My husband, he's a contractor. He does home remodels. That's like his thing. It's his wheelhouse. He loves it. So he's, you know, he's gone typically from, you know, 6 a.m. until about 5 p.m. working in people's homes and remodeling their kitchens, their basements, or their bathrooms. And then, you know, I am a financial coach, so that's how we earn our income for our household. It can be a little challenging. I still stay home with our kids, thankfully, so we don't have to pay for daycare or anything like that. But the only way we make it work is by keeping our family priority number one. And, you know, we built a solid emergency fund. So in case of unforeseen circumstances happen with either one of our businesses, we still have funds to survive and to keep our family afloat.
And how many months do you guys have saved for that?
We have almost 5 months. We're about $500 short of our 5 month goal. So we should have that by the end of this month.
That's not bad. Okay. So do you feel like as an entrepreneurial family that you need a larger emergency fund or?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I was curious. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I mean, being self-employed, anything and everything can happen. Especially with my husband being construction, you know, that tends to be a very volatile market sometimes. And so he may not end up having jobs for months and months at a time. Like right now, everything's going great. Business is booming, but that could all come to a standstill, you know, in the end of this year or next year or any time at all, really. And so being prepared, I think is a blessing and is worth it.
Have you guys had to use the emergency fund at any point?
Knock on wood, no.
Nice. Okay.
Yes, we have several other small funds. We have what we call the slush fund, which we usually keep about $1,000 in it. It's kind of like a small, like, oh, we made, you know, a budget mistake of some sort. You know, there have been times, you know, that's the thing with budgeting. It's never going to be perfect. You are going to make mistakes from time to time. And so that account is there for those little mistakes that are not emergencies. They're not anything catastrophic. It's just kind of there to be that buffer account for us.
And is that in a savings account?
It is. It's just in a regular old savings account with our normal bank. We bank at Wells Fargo. So it's both, you know, our checking account and that slush fund savings account is at Wells Fargo. But our big emergency fund is at an online bank. It's at Capital One 360 because it's a little bit more out of sight, out of mind. So we're not seeing that huge dollar amount and being tempted to touch it.
Smart. Yeah, that's very smart. So with your business, how long have you officially been focusing on jessiefuron.com?
Honestly, since about December of last year. So I was, the budgetmama.com before then. I've been in business for 5 years this year. But I was the budget mama for the majority of that time. And I just, rebranded to jessiefuron.com. So yeah, it's been a fun journey.
Can you tell everybody too, that might be thinking of going through rebranding themselves, why did you decide to rebrand from the budget mama to Jessie Furon?
I realized, after going to FinCon, in 2016, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before, I realized that I, was being referred to as a mommy blogger a whole bunch of times. And it was a little frustrating because I don't have anything against mommy bloggers, but I don't see myself as a mommy blogger. I'm a financial coach and I wanted to come off in that way, not as a mommy blogger. And so I realized in order to, kind of brand myself in the way I wanted to, I needed to make some pretty drastic changes, and it's been a blessing. It really has been. I feel like, when you start recognizing what your key goals are for your business, it becomes a whole lot easier to step into those roles.
So what was the hardest part about rebranding?
The emotional aspect, because it was like letting go of my baby, so to speak, like letting go of the budget mama identity. So that was kind of hard. And then of course the unknown, I didn't know if my traffic was going to tank. I didn't know if people were going to revolt and freak out and run away from my site or what was going to happen. But honestly, I mean, it's been very calm. Like there hasn't been, any backlash at all. You know, page views are still the same, you know, email subscribers still the same. People are still there, which is I'm so thankful for.
So not too bad of a transition then. I like that. I think a lot of times we think it's going to be this like really big, lengthy process, and it's typically not that bad.
Yeah, it really honestly was not that bad at all. It really was not. So if you're considering rebranding, definitely do it. It's not as hard as you think it is, especially if you hire the right help. It's not that difficult.
Can we dive into some like blogging stuff? Is that okay with you? How, I still think, I mean, it's, blogging's not a new concept. We all know inherently what it is, but I still hear so many people don't understand how people can make money by blogging. Can you just talk about the revenue streams of blogging first?
Yes. For my site in particular, I have my own products and services. I have ad revenue and I have affiliate income. That's the three main sources of income for my site.
I love it. Pretty straightforward. So for somebody that's considering starting a blog too, or they're just kind of fearful, how long does it actually take if you are giving this your all and you're doing the right strategies? How long does it take for people to start seeing some traction?
You know, honestly, it can be as soon as, you know, six months to a year. And it can take longer as well. Just depends on what your priorities are for building your blog. I mean, if you're just trying to create a hobby, then you might not, it might take you a little bit longer. If you're trying to build a business and you have the time to put into it, again, for me, I'm a stay at home mom. So I don't always have, you know, that time on my hands to go and dig deep and keep growing and growing and growing and growing my blog. I have to recognize that my first priority is being a mom. So if you have that time to build it very quickly, you can build it, you know, in 6 months to a year. It just depends on you and the time commitment that you have. If you're looking to do this as a hobby or as a business as well.
I think that's a good distinction too. Sometimes the hobby / business thing is they're very, very different. And the amount of focus and energy you can put into a hobby realistically might not be the same as you would treat a business. So I think that's a good point.
Yeah. And I mean, when I started my blog, it was truly just kind of a hobby anyways. And I didn't even really know you can make money. And then once I realized that, it took me a little over a year to finally start earning real income. I know I define real income as over $100 a month. And it took me until the end of 2015 before I started earning a full-time income from my blog. But I definitely could have gotten there sooner, if I just had, you know, more time to commit to it.
Yeah. And tell me about the moment you made your first dollar with your website.
I was like, oh my God, I made money. Oh my goodness. I mean, I remember the first $100 I made, which might as well have been like $1,000 because I was like, this isn't like 63 cents anymore. This is like real money. I can do this. Look at this. Oh my gosh. I was so excited. And I forget what I remember I was like, I'm going to treat myself to something. And I forget what the heck I bought, but it was like, I was so excited because I was like, oh, I can just spend this. Oh, wow.
I know that first dollar is so cool when you realize that what you can like pull from your mind, put onto a web page completely from scratch. You made up everything on that page. It is such a cool feeling. You're like, people will pay for this. This is amazing.
It's awesome. I mean, it really is. And I remember when I created my first product, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe people are buying this. This is insane. I'm like, this is awesome. I was so nervous. I didn't think anybody would buy anything from me. But I mean, when you build a voice of trust and authority, people will resonate with that and they will be more than happy to buy your products and services from you.
So for you and your husband personally, how has entrepreneurship either made your life better or made it more complicated?
It's made our life better because especially with my husband, it's made it better because at the beginning of 2015, my husband was working for a company. He'd worked there for about 3 years and the company was just draining my husband. It really was. I mean, sucking the life straight out of him. And the pivotal moment was our daughter was 2 months old. My husband had been working out of town for just over a month. And he was working the graveyard shift. So it was pretty intense. So we never talked to each other. And our daughter ended up having to be admitted into the hospital because she couldn't breathe. And so it was very, very hard on me because I was here by myself with my 2-month-old baby girl. And then I have my two boys and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you know, she's struggling to breathe. And I'm like panicked and I'm like, okay. And so, you know, thankfully my boys went with my mom, but I still need to go home and get things for them. And so I was going to have to leave my baby at the hospital, which was so hard for me. I was like, oh my God. And I remember I was trying to call my husband, but he was asleep because he was working the graveyard shift. And I remember trying to call his company to say, somebody go knock on the door, go wake him up, go get him up. His daughter's in the hospital. And they were so unresponsive to me. And I'm like, I'm not joking. Like, someone please go wake my husband up. And so finally I tracked down the hotel he was staying at and got somebody from the hotel to go wake him up. And so my husband then is calling his boss, telling him he has to come home. Like, his daughter is in the hospital. He's got to come home. And they were just so unwilling to do it. My husband just finally said, well, you're going to have to fire me then. I'm going. And so he thankfully came back home, and because he'd been working the graveyard shift, at this point it was like 10 o'clock at night, he came and he stayed at the hospital so I could go home and get everything else taken care of. So we never had to leave our baby without one of us being there. But that was a pivotal moment for us. They didn't fire him at that point, but it made him realize that they weren't going to give us what we needed. I mean, this was a real issue. I mean, our daughter was in the hospital. This wasn't, you know, something silly. This was a serious matter, and they weren't willing to help us at all in regards to getting my husband home. And so my husband was like, I'm done. I can't do this no more. And so that's when he finally decided, I'm going to start my own business again. And because of the fact that we had built up the emergency fund and don't have the debt anymore, it made it a lot easier and simpler to do that.
Dang, that is crazy. And speaking of little ones, I hear one in the background.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Here in a minute. You're totally good. So let's start wrapping it up because I know I'm a mom of three. You're a busy, busy lady with no daycare. So I get it. So let's start wrapping it up. Is there any like final pieces of wisdom or anything you want to leave with the audience?
When it comes to managing your money well, just remember that it's a trial and error and that you're never going to do it perfectly, but that it's a habit. It's a lifelong habit. Whatever your goals or your dreams are in life, chances are money somehow is going to get you there. So look at it that way. Look at that you're managing your money well today so you can achieve those lifelong goals and dreams that you have in place for you.
Jesse, thank you so much. It was so fun to chat with you and hear all of your stories and your journey to entrepreneurship too. That's always so fun to hear. I appreciate you taking some time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Whitney. I truly appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Have a good one.
You too.
All right. What'd you think? I love this interview with Jesse. I thought her candidness behind selling the Tahoe was specifically really interesting to me. And I really liked how she mentioned she had that value, that identity with her car. That was kind of her thing. And her friends didn't really relate to that. They thought that was kind of silly because maybe they placed their identity in a home or whatever else it was. But I thought that was really cool. And so that's kind of my challenge for you today, is to start thinking about that thing. What is it for you? Where do you place your identity? I know for me personally, it's my house. So that really resonated with me as well. But start thinking about that. And if you had to, would you be able to get rid of that thing that you identify with? I hope the answer is yes, but it takes some soul searching to get to that point. So I thought that was really brave of her to be able to talk about that candidly. All right, guys, that is it for today. If you like this episode, share it, love it, do all the things, leave a review, subscribe to the podcast. All of that stuff means the world to me and really helps the show's ratings. So I appreciate it all. And if you've got some value with it, send it to somebody that you think could use a little extra help today or a little inspiration. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week for another episode of the Money Nerds Podcast. Bye.